Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And as we do every Thursday morning at 7 o'clock, we welcome in our good friend, Jared Stillman from Stillman & Company. Jared, it's good to talk to you. I feel like I hadn't talked to you in a while. You kind of gave me the week off last week with you and Joe screaming at each other, so I'm excited to talk to you this week.
No, I'm excited to be on the program. Boy, last week was a fun week. We haven't caught up with you, Robbie, but I'm glad to be on today.
Well, glad to have you on, Jared. With the Giants game coming up, my first question for you is:
are we not going to talk about Joe winning Jared versus Joe yesterday?
Well, he's done that a lot. You want me to congratulate him?
Well, I will say this. Let me just start with saying this. I truly deserved to lose yesterday. I thought back about it. Joe did deserve to win. Unlike Joe, who will never admit when I deserve to win, I do want Joe to know that I did not deserve, because my Trevor Lawrence take yesterday was so bad. I mean, the idea that I was like, you know, he was a good college player, but he wasn't really that good of a college player. I went back and looked it up. He finished second in the Heisman voting in 2020. I'm like, what was I thinking? Like, he played 3 years in college. He was second in the Heisman Trophy in 1 year, won the national championship in another year. Who knows about that middle year? And not only that, Clemson is awful, like, without him. They were awful last year, even though they won 10 games. And, I mean, we all watched the game Monday night, right? Do we think Clemson has any chance to compete with Georgia or the good teams that we saw?
No.
So what was wrong with me yesterday? So Joe absolutely positively deserved to win Jared versus Joe.
Joe, congratulations.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
You're very welcome. So Jared, heading into this game, what concerns you the most at this moment about the Titans heading into this season?
Oh, I mean, everything. What doesn't concern me? But I would say heading into this game, it would be the right tackle. And I'll say right tackle for two reasons. I asked Trevor on Tuesday, is there any chance the Titans can lose to this Giants team? Like, let's be real. The Giants stink. It's a horrible organization. They have a bad quarterback. They might have a good coach, but the team is so bad right now. Like, this is like the Mike Mularkey first Titans team that he took over when they were so, 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 so bad. But at least Mike had a guy that people thought could be good in Mariota at quarterback and had DeMarco Murray at running back. Brian Daboll, he didn't have anything. But I asked Trevor, I was like, is there any way the Titans could lose this game? And he said yes, because of the right tackle. Then I asked Chris Sanders, I was like, is there anything that worries you? And he said yes, and it was the right tackle. So right tackle has now become this huge concern of mine that always was somewhat of a concern. You know, when you say what concerns me going into the season, taking the Giants game out of this, I think it's the fact that the Titans are going to have to replace Harold Landry's 12 sacks from last season, and I don't exactly know how they're going to do it. I mean, yeah, Rashad Weaver had a good training camp, and he's got some talent. Like, he's not a bad player, but is he a 12-sack guy? Because a 12-sack guy is basically a $100 million player, and that's what the Titans are going to have to replace. And so they're going to have to replace that leading sacker, which has been done before by other teams, but normally is not done all that effectively. Then they're also on offense going to have to replace A.J. Brown's production. And what bothers me about the replacing of A.J. Brown's production is even if Robert Woods and Austin Hooper can do that, then they're just back to where they were last year, which wasn't good enough. What they needed Woods to replace Corey Davis. They needed Hooper to replace Jonnu Smith. And they need Treylon Burks to be A.J. Brown. And so right now I am not confident that the Titans will be able to do that on offense. So given that and the fact that the schedule is incredibly front-loaded with games against Buffalo in week two and the Raiders and the Colts and then the Colts again early before Halloween, that is a concern. It doesn't mean that things can't go right, but the question you asked was concern, and I am concerned.
On the replacing Landry sacks front, shouldn't Bud Dupree be – I mean, if Bud Dupree is 2020 Bud Dupree, is the Bud Dupree who in his later years with the Steelers and who the Titans paid big money to get, would that not go a long way toward doing that at least? I mean, I understand it's a loss either way, but Bud Dupree should be the guy, right?
So the question can be, can Dupree take the 12 sacks from Landry and can Weaver take the 3 sacks from Dupree and then Autry tie his career high again of 9 sacks and Simmons stay at 8.5. I mean, I think they can, yeah. I mean, here's my thing on Dupree. I thought Dupree, when he was healthy, had a good season last year, regardless of the sack total. Like, I thought Bud Dupree, when he was in the lineup, in my opinion, there was a noticeable difference when he was in there. And so I was kind of banking on the way that they played at the end of last season when he was in there, and they were really, truly a dominant defensive front. And just like the 2008 Titans, that dominant defensive front carried that team to being a dominant defense. And that Titans team, too, was the number one seed in the AFC playoffs and blew a game at home against the Ravens and D-Mace because D-Mace had a touchdown and because they turned the football over, just like this team turned the football over in the playoffs, too. And then Albert Haynesworth went to Washington and Kyle Vandenbosch got hurt, and that defensive front and entire defense was never the same until Jeff Fisher was out of here. So I would agree with you that I do think that Dupree could, you know, pick up some of those sacks, but Harold Landry plays 90% of the snaps for a reason. He's a really, really, really good player. Dupree could, but it's hard for me to bank on that. And I still, you know, to the point that I asked TD after Landry got hurt, if the defensive line could be elite, and Landry said, and TD said he could not say elite because of the loss of Landry, and that's tough when that's the best part of the football team.
Jared, what are we going to see from Derrick Henry this year, in your opinion? There's been a whole lot of different ideas and thoughts on him throughout the offseason about what he's got left in the tank. What do you think we're going to see from number 22 heading into this year?
Well, I don't know how I could have an opinion on that when Derrick Henry practiced like three times with pads on, and it was literally like two handoffs and he came out. So it's going to be hard for me to be able to sit there and tell you anything with like true certainty. I will say this. I was at my parents' house like 2 weeks ago, and I was going through like my old closet, and I found the 2002 team yearbook was stuck in there somewhere. And it had the recaps from the 2001 games. And I like Eddie George a lot, but I was just looking at some of those games. The 2001 season, the Titans were coming off being a number one seed. In 2000, they were the best team in football at 13-3. The next year, they went 7-9. They started 0-3. And the reason they started so poorly that year was because they were a run-first team. Eddie George had led the league in carries the year before. They were a run-first team. He had made the Pro Bowl. And then Eddie George just couldn't do it anymore. And I was looking at the rushing total, like in the little game recaps. Eddie, 49 on 18, 79 on 20, 26 on 13, 85 on 29 carries, 51 on 26 carries, 13 yards, 70, 71, 61, 58, 51. I mean, like, Eddie George was a 1,000-yard rusher every year, and he was certainly not a 62 on 29 carries guy, but that foot injury and the wear and tear caught up to him, and that was when they had to make the transition to being a passing team with Steve McNair and D-Mace and Frank Wycheck and that group. The problem is, without A.J. Brown, they don't have a Derek Mason on their team anymore, and they really, no disrespect to Tannehill, but they don't have a Steve McNair at quarterback. Tannehill is not going to become a league MVP. So I get concerned about that. That, I believe, was Eddie's age 28 season. This is Derek's age 28 season. The fact that the Titans really just ran Eddie, and there was nothing that showed that Eddie George was going to slow down the way that Eddie George slowed down that year. And Derek's coming off of a broken foot and a playoff game in which he didn't necessarily look like Derek. So he looked fine in the little glances of him at training camp that we got, but that whole Eddie George age 28 season thing, that makes me nervous.
Jared, we've talked about fan reaction to Tannehill. I guess I feel a little, remember in the wake of the playoff loss, I was like, you know, the first incompletion he throws in the opener is going to be like chorus of boos. And I don't think it will be that. But this is one of those things where I struggle to get a great feel because you have to be careful of relying on social media to tell you what a fan base thinks. But I am interested to see how he's received. I'm actually interested to see if the Titans introduce the offense or the defense Sunday, actually. And just how much patience there is among the masses in that stadium. If Tannehill has a bad series, throws a pick, whatever. What's your sense for just the fan base and how they are going to approach this season with Tannehill?
Yeah, Tannehill's in a really unfortunate spot because I thought he had a really impressive camp. The problem is that when they get out there against really the Bills in week two, but also the Giants, I think that, you know, the expectation for Tannehill is going to be kind of along those Kyle Turris lines of paying what he owes, because I think the fans personally hold him responsible for why they didn't win the Super Bowl last year. I know that I do. But, boy, I think Tannehill's in a tough spot, because even if Petit Ferrer becomes a decent right tackle this year, it's not going to happen week one or week two or week three. And they're playing some really good pass rushers early in the season, and that's going to be tough on Tannehill. And then Tannehill's top wide receiver, or the guy who needs to be his top wide receiver in Treylon Burks, he might become that, but he's not that yet. And so I feel like Tannehill is going to be put in a really tough spot early in the season, and it's almost like being president of the United States. No matter what happens under your watch as president, whether it is your fault, and there are things that the president or that presidents have done that is a president's fault, or whether it's not your fault as president, then you will be blamed by the American people. Like, that's just how it works. And that's how I feel about Tannehill this season, specifically at that position, which is, even if Nicholas Petit-Ferrer isn't ready to play or isn't ready to start in the NFL right away, he is, because of the mistake that they made around the draft and free agency and everything else, and now Tannehill is in trouble. Or if all of a sudden his receivers can't get open or they can't make dynamic plays for him, then they're going to blame Tannehill when they look at the stat sheet. They see 212 yards, but there's not somebody there to take the top off the defense. If there's somebody there not to take the top off the defense, they're going to load the box. The running game's not going to be effective, and then play action won't be the same. So it's one of those things where I feel bad for Tannehill, but that's also why quarterbacks get paid $30, $40, $50 million, and everybody else doesn't, because they carry more responsibility. And their ability to carry others is what makes them more valuable. Tom Brady has no offensive line in Tampa Bay. Nobody feels sorry for Tom Brady. Nobody's going to care about that on Sunday night when we watch them play the Cowboys. Dak Prescott doesn't have a left tackle, and Ezekiel Elliott gains 20 pounds every season. But nobody's going to feel bad for Dak Prescott on Sunday night. So I am worried about Tannehill because of what's around him. I thought he had a good camp. I thought Vrabel gave him the best compliment that a Bill Belichick coach or Bill Belichick-connected coach could give Tannehill when saying that his decision-making and accuracy have been good, and so far that he's really liked his decision-making and accuracy. But at the same time, what's going to happen at right tackle? What's going to happen at receiver? And that does make me nervous.
That was an impressive way to weave Kyle Turris in there. I greatly appreciate it. Jared, great stuff as always. Looking forward to your predictions coming up later this afternoon.
Sounds good, guys. Take it easy.
Absolutely. Jared Stillman, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Thursday morning at 7 o'clock here on the program. A much more amicable edition of Jared Stillman on our show today.
I don't even know what you're referring to.
No? Okay. I'm just throwing things out there. 615.
Just a nice conversation.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We'll have more of your thoughts on the Titans coming up next. This is Robbie at Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. I got some tickets to give away, a pair of tickets to see Kevin Hart coming up at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday. Be calling number 5-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Kevin Hart coming up at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday. 615-737-1025. A very kind edition of not Jared versus Joe there, but Jared Stillman on the program. Somebody on the text line says Joe's turning into a 5-year-old. I don't know what that's in reference to, but Joe, I feel like you have acted very maturely today, so I don't know what that's in reference to.
Yeah, what does that mean? I responded. I eat my vegetables. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of 5-year-olds don't want to eat their vegetables. I do.
Very well put.
Thank you.
So what did you think of Jared's thoughts on the Titans heading into the Giants game? Is your biggest concern heading into this game the right tackle spot, or does it lie elsewhere with this Titans roster?
Well, I'd say if you had to, yeah, if you had to point to one, like what could mess this game up for the Titans? You know, they may not have enough pass rush Sunday and beyond, you know, with Landry. I mean, I think they're still going to have a good pass rush. Clearly, this hurts them a lot in that way. You could look at the cornerbacks and say, look, a guy like Kadarius Toney gets the right cleats on, and you better watch out that the Giants have a quarterback who is capable of making some throws, capable of running around, extending plays. You know, you get some of those scramble drills going, and who knows? You can look at the corners put into this situation. Think back to Molden being picked on by the Cardinals last year. But, yeah, I think Petit Frere's got to be your big one. Now, if Ojulari and or Thibodeau were playing for sure, then I think it'd be a bigger deal. It times out well. And I know all these wonderful bits of analysis are just going to be mocked Sunday when the Giants have 8 sacks.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
You know, but it's a pretty favorable debut situation when the top 2 pass rushers on a particular team are probably not playing and you're breaking in a rookie right tackle.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a huge test, a really good measuring stick on Saturday or on Sunday to see where Petit Frere is. I'm looking forward to that. I am interested in terms of just the sack total. And I think sometimes we get too wrapped up in the sack total. I've certainly been guilty of that before. It is important, though. And we talked about the strength of the team before the Landry injury being the pass rush for the Titans. In terms of pure sacks, how close can they come to replacing what Landry brought to the table? And what does Bud Dupree have to say about that? Like, I've expected all along, even before Landry got hurt, for Bud Dupree to have a big bounce back season from a sack total standpoint. Now, whether he got to 12 or not, I have no clue. But he's at 3 last year, and if he's healthy, you know, he should be trending toward the double-digit sack guy. Now, I think it's more crucial than ever that he get there. I know that sacks don't tell the whole story, but I am interested. They are important. They can stop drives. They can be very beneficial, as we know. How close can they come to replacing the sack total with 12 sacks now out of the lineup with Harold Landry? And how much of that is on Bud Dupree? It's going to be really interesting to see.
Yeah. So they had 43 sacks last year. Obviously a huge uptick from the year before. That was 10th in the league. Well, you know, the Steelers were first with 55. And I can get coach speaky. To me, they could have 38. They could have 48, and a sack total of 38 could be better because they get constant pressure and they affect quarterbacks and they get quarterbacks off their spots and maybe they just don't get them to the ground as often. That's my question is, can they count on consistent pressure like we saw a lot last year? And I think especially I agree with Jared on Bud Dupree when he was healthy. That did make a difference. His number wasn't great. So you just look at 3 sacks. Wow, gosh, that's disappointing. For a guy coming off an ACL, and I thought the presence he brought, the pressure later in the season, he was valuable. So I don't know. I think the way Jared broke it down, you could take those sacks to Dupree, take Dupree's sacks to Weaver. I could see Jeffrey Simmons being a double-digit sack guy this year. I think it's possible. I also think that, but I also think that teams are going to throw the kitchen sink at him. And if they do, well, Autry. Similar season needed for sure for the Titans. But Dupree's the guy, the production guy, the sack guy. I mean, for what he's making, that is a salary that dictates, let's see, a sack total.
No question.
With your, you know, not just good pressure and things like that. Let's actually finish some of those plays and get them to the ground. So if Dupree is a double-digit sack guy, I mean, you could probably come close. Problem is, of course, that's all in place now, and then imagine it with Landry. I mean, that's where, to me, this team had a chance to be just terrifying for other teams, and now it's just you take a guy that good out of the mix, and obviously they're going to take a step back from what they would have been.
Well, we know that, you know, the pass rush and coverage downfield works in tandem. That was another thing of why I felt pretty good about the corner room heading into the year of – not only do you have guys that have played well in camp, McCreary's played well, you know, Farley, I think by all accounts, there's signs of life there, and you feel like you may have something with Caleb Farley. We know about Christian Fulton. But part of the reason I felt really good about the corner room was the pass rush that's going to be attacking the quarterbacks. Like, those two things, as we know, work in tandem. I think back to 2020, and we got all over the Titans secondary, and we were asking questions like, what's going on with Kevin Byard out there? Why are things going looking so poorly for Kevin Byard? It's like, oh, well, the quarterback's got 13 seconds in the pocket to throw the ball wherever he wants to. Those two things are connected at the hip. So, look, I still think the Titans are going to be able to generate a pass rush. I just don't feel as great about it without Harold Landry. And I do wonder how that affects the play of the cornerbacks in the secondary as a whole down the field.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Byard, because we struggled with that all that season, right? It's like, has he really fallen off? Now, he missed some open field tackles in some game where it's like, oh, man, that's a play he makes, right? Yeah. So he had some clear things you could see where he made mistakes or whatever. But for the most part, it's like, what are you going to do? You have Vic Beasley out there, you know, crocheting a sweater instead of rushing the passer. I mean, you had no chance. You had no chance in the back end. So, I mean, you look at how he played last year. Did Kevin Byard do a Rocky, you know, training session in Russia to all of a sudden become a great player again last year? Or did he benefit from the fact that the guys in front of him actually affected quarterbacks? You know, Kevin Byard's been a really good player his entire career. I'm pretty sure of that. So it is. It's critical. It's look, in the NFL today, obviously it's about the passer. It's about the pass catcher. And then it's about the people who affect the passer. I mean, to me, those are the three most important elements. All due respect, I love running the football. Derrick Henry and all that stuff. I mean, that's why the Titans, I think, are fascinating, because they're a different kind of team. But you got to be able to do that. The Titans still will. They will do that. It's just too bad. Like, you know, the whole thing was, yep, pay big for Landry to keep this group together. Like, just run it back and see how ridiculous it could be. And I think it could have been ridiculous, and we'll never know.
Coming up next, we'll switch gears, get into some college football, look at the weekend slate of games, including two local teams with perhaps two of the more intriguing games of the weekend as well. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 6:04 on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds are on the road taking on the Charlotte Knights, the AAA affiliate of the Chicago White Sox. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. We'll have the Rob Rant coming up at 7:45. Looking forward to that. John Glennon from SI.com at 8 o'clock as well to talk all things Tennessee Titans. But, Joe, we now switch gears and look ahead to the weekend in college football. It's not a great weekend of college football action in terms of the Week 2 slate of games. There are some intriguing ones, most of which take place in the SEC, and a couple involve local teams here. We'll get to those here in just a few minutes. Let me just start by saying this, and I mentioned this yesterday. People are trying to talk me into Alabama and Texas being interesting, and I can't get there. I know it's the name brands and all that stuff, and I am interested to see, as Sarkisian continues to develop down there, his program, what it looks like. But if you think that Texas has a chance to beat Alabama coming up on Saturday, I got news for you. They don't. They're going to get crushed. This is a very ripe take of mine for like freezing cold takes, but I think they're going to get absolutely destroyed by Alabama this weekend.
I do too. I also thought the exact same thing about Texas A&M and Alabama a year ago. It does happen. I mean, look, every time Saban loses in the regular season, those losses to Ole Miss or whatever, A&M, you know, A&M was a little different. Johnny Manziel that one year. It's stunning. You know, like going into the game, you're like, ah. But I also think back to last year, and I was like, oh, Ole Miss is, ooh, boy, that offense is cooking, and Matt Corral, and what did Kiffin say? Get your popcorn.
Get your popcorn ready.
Yeah, and then it was like, here, have that popcorn shoved down your throat and get your butt back to Oxford, man. it's hard to buy that this will be a good game. I hope it is. I hope this is like Texas A&M. Actually, one difference there is, and I don't know how much of a difference it made, but I like a overmatched home team's chances a lot better if they're playing like a primetime game as opposed to like the noon game, you know, yeah. or 11 a.m., which is what this is, I believe, right?
So it is, which is strange to me, but it is, yes.
It is strange, especially in a week that is light, like you said. It's not a great schedule. And now that we mention it, is this because this is the Fox Big Noon kickoff?
I think so.
Okay, well, that's the thing. They've tried to make that, you know, the premier game. Fox's big thing is like all their best Big Ten games. You know, in a lot of cases, they do that noon kick thing.
Get fired up. So,
yeah. I mean, look, I I'm not opposed to a really good game in every time slot, so that's cool. In some weeks, I think it's great because then you don't have to have like three games you're trying to watch at 7, you know?
Yeah.
But this week would have been a decent time for that to be in primetime. But I guess instead, we'll all just have to turn our eyes to the swamp.
We will. That's probably the game of the week in college football. Florida taking on Kentucky in the swamp. Impressive win for Florida last week against Utah. Joe, the more I've thought about this game, and I don't know exactly who I'm going to pick yet in it to win, but the more I've thought about this game, this could be the classic scenario of, all right, a team looked great in week one, maybe gets a little overhyped, and now in week two is in for a bit of a stunner. I mean, Florida right now I think is up to a 6-point favorite in this game against Kentucky. They were unranked last week. And obviously you deserve to be ranked after you beat, you know, the number 7 team in the country. They're now at number 12. And I think there may be a little bit of overreacting to Florida going on right now. But we're going to find out coming up on Saturday night as they take on Michelle Knezevic's beloved Wildcats.
I'm so stressed.
Yeah, it's – I mean, I don't – and honestly, I thought last year watching him, I'm like, this guy could be really good. I don't think it's overreacting to look at Anthony Richardson and say, oh boy, that guy has a chance to be special. How good is Utah? I think Utah's good, but it's still Pac-12 good, right?
Yes.
I do think they're good. You know, they had a couple ridiculous mistakes in that game, but I like their team. Look, if you go, hey, said this last week. I mean, you got a roster that has like 40 plus 4 stars on it. Like there's probably some good football players in there. I think Billy Napier is a good coach and he may not have, although that's the thing, he's got recruiting going now too. He was under a lot of heat there on the message boards for some of the early recruiting. I think he's a good coach. So I think they are good. Yeah, you're right. To vault that high. But you know what? I actually like that. To me, the polls should be completely if we're going to still have polls, and we will, because it's still just something for us to argue about in college football, I say, and when I've voted in the past, and I would take someone like, okay, I'm going to early in the season completely overreact things. I have no idea how good these teams are. So you had a big win. You're way up here. You lost. You're get out, you know? And then eventually things will kind of – then it's like later it's like, you have less movement, but this whole idea, even like last week, like if I was voting, I'm putting Georgia number one. I'm definitely putting Georgia ahead of Ohio State.
Yeah.
After what I saw, but people, some voters are like, well, they don't deserve to move down. No, that's not the point. Just vote on who you think are the best 25 teams in order. It's not like, well, you can't move someone down. Yes, you can. You can change who's number one, even if they won. Because you think someone else is more worthy of being number one. But anyway, now you got me going off on a AP voter tangent. Bottom line, I think Ford is good. I do also worry about Kentucky with the running back situation, right?
Yeah.
So Rodriguez is still suspended, team captain, really good player, and then they just lost another back to an injury. This could be two first-round picks going at it in this game. Levis and Richardson. That's exciting.
It's going to be really fascinating to watch how that one shakes out. Coming up at 6 o'clock on Saturday night. Joe, this Vanderbilt-Wake Forest line is really interesting to me. So it opened up, I think Wake Forest was 6.5, and then the news came out that Sam Hartman was going to play, and the line jumped to 13.5 for Wake Forest. And now today it's back down to 11.5. So the money's been coming in on Vanderbilt when it was at 13.5, which I'll be honest, kind of surprises me a little bit. This is an interesting game. Like I think, especially if Sam Hartman is full strength, Sam Hartman, like I think Wake Forest has a chance to put up a ton of points in this game. I am interested to see a Vanderbilt offense that's been very explosive through the first 2 weeks, albeit against a quality of opponent that has not been very good. How can Mike Wright and company move the ball and score and hang in there with Wake Forest in this game at home? That to me is really intriguing. This Vanderbilt offense, I'm really interested to see how that goes against Wake Forest.
Yeah, so am I. This is not a great slate of games overall, but it's a great weekend kind of locally. We're going to find out about Kentucky and Florida. We're going to find out about Vanderbilt. We're going to find out about Tennessee. We're not going to find everything out. We're going to find out a lot about all four of those teams. So obviously that's the SEC East. I guess it's like the race for second in the SEC East. But Tennessee and Vanderbilt. And I think Vanderbilt can have offensive success. Rocco Griffin coming back, I think, is significant. It's nice to have another back and a guy who can get those hard yards sometimes to go with what Ray Davis does dynamically. They're going to have to be almost. I mean, they're going to have to be great. They got to finish those drives with touchdowns. Clark Lee's talked about it this week. You got to get touchdowns, and I think they can. I think they can score on Wake Forest defense without question. You know that Clawson's done a great job with his program. It is very much built around what the offense does. The offense is fascinating for people who haven't watched them closely. It's kind of triple optionist, slow mesh, a lot of RPO. It's really cool. It's fun to watch. And now Hartman's back. That's going to be a problem for Vanderbilt's defense. They need to tip some balls at the line, and you know they need to get a sack, strip sack, and stuff like that. Make some big plays because they're going to give up a lot. But I think it's high scoring. I think Tennessee-Pittsburgh, same thing. Both defenses have talent, and I love what Pittsburgh does on defense, but those offenses are going to have big days, I believe.
Join Big Joe Dubin and Elijah Campbell tomorrow for the Apple Collision Center's Game Blitz, presented by National Playmakers Academy from 6 to midnight. They'll preview the big games and then take you through the night of high school football around the mid-state. It's the Apple Collision Center's Game Blitz, presented by National Playmakers Academy on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Coming up next, it is time for the Rob Rant. We'll get to that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
Here comes the sun. And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. I'm hijacking it today, the Rob Rant, taking place on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, I'm fired up today. It's the beginning of the NFL season. The Bills and Rams are taking place tonight. I'm looking forward to it very much. But I will say, and this is really no fault. It's really not. No fault of the two teams that I'm about to pick on here. And we'll get to our predictions coming up later in the show. But I have never in my life, for two teams that I really don't care about, I have never in my life rooted for two teams not to do well more than I'm about to root for the Buffalo Bills and the Indianapolis Colts. The love fest for the Bills and the Colts is out of control. Again, I don't really have an opinion on either team. Like the Colts don't bother me. The Bills certainly don't bother me. I mean, their fan base has been long suffering. So it's really nothing to do with the teams themselves, but it's the love that's out there. And there's several different examples I can point to, and I'll start with the Bills, and I'll go with two of them. At ESPN, they had a panel of 25 that picked their Super Bowl predictions. 12 picked the Bills to win the Super Bowl. That's not That's to win the Super Bowl, not just get there. They were more than that to pick them to get there. And then at thebelovedathletic.com, the panel of 43 riders, of which Joe Rexroad was a part of, 30 of them have picked the Bills to win the AFC Championship. 22 have picked the Bills to win the Super Bowl. The next closest team is 5 with Tampa Bay that has been picked to win the Super Bowl. And in the AFC, the next closest team is the Chargers at 4 people picking them to win the AFC Championship. So 30-4 is the second place team in the AFC Championship vote by theathletic.com. I don't understand how we can sit here all offseason long and talk about how the AFC is as loaded as it's ever been. It's going to be the best conference we've ever seen in the history of football. All this stuff, the quarterback play, yada, yada, yada. And then we get to predictions, and 30 people have picked the Buffalo Bills to win the AFC, and then second-place team is the Chargers. That's not a loaded conference. That's an overwhelming favorite. What are we talking about here? So, look, I think the Bills are going to be very good. We'll get to our predictions coming up later in the show. But the love fest for the Bills, and then the love fest specifically for Matt Ryan, but the Colts, is driving me nuts heading into this season. And it's of no fault of their own. I am just going to be heavily rooting against those two teams heading into this year, Joe Rexroad.
I don't blame you. I hear what you're saying. I do want it on the record that, like, because I now it's like I want to change, because it's like, wait a minute, I don't want to be part of this this groupthink Bills conglomerate. I mean, I want it on the record that I've been, you know, talking Bills way before all these predictions came out.
You've been talking Bills for months. So I will give you credit.
So I don't know if that makes me smart or dumb. You know, that that I'm on this train too. But I will say this. I will argue a little bit with you. I mean, look, you have to pick somebody, right? So, I mean,
I agree.
That's not to say that everybody who picked them just believes they're going to blow everyone away. It's like, you got to pick someone. And I think they're the best team. I'm sorry. But I get it. I think you're going to have that backlash that you're talking about with a lot of people. And I mean, what are Bills fans thinking right now? They got to be hating this, don't they? I mean, I'm sure level loving it, but also it's like, please don't, because we always blow it. Please don't do this.
They're just smashing tables.
One of the funniest things about this thing to me, and look, I don't know. You know, the bar that they set last year in Cincinnati's high, right? You get to the Super Bowl. So I don't know if they're going to get back there or not. But it is fascinating to me that they were the AFC representative in the Super Bowl last year. And by pretty much every measure you can look at, they got better this offseason. And you had one person in the Athletic picked them to win the AFC, and that same person picked them to win the Super Bowl. One person. The team that has Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. It got significantly better this offseason, and one person is picking them. Boggles my mind.
Yeah. Well, it's a good point. You know, the thing is, I think all last year, the Bills were better than the Bengals. Although, I actually remember, the Bills did have a rough patch last year, but I think the Bills were perceived as better than the Bengals. The Bengals were that stunning. I mean, everybody's with the Bengals. It's like, first place schedule, reality hitting, all that stuff. They're ahead of schedule. The Bills they've built up to this, to being on schedule now to win it. And really, last year, the Bills obviously easily could have won it. So, like, I think both trains of thought make sense, but it is kind of stunning to see the numbers, the lopsidedness of all this.
I don't recall this being the case, and maybe I'm wrong. I'll have to go back and look. But do you recall it being the case of it being this one-sided, picking a Super Bowl winner heading into a season in recent memory?
Mostly, no. I'm trying to think. There may be an example or two here or there. And if you want to go back, you know, maybe some of those Patriots teams.
I'm sure some Patriots teams got a lot of love, yeah.
But that's actually going back a while. Like, I'm sure going into the year where they flirted with the perfect season, did everybody pick the Patriots probably going into that year? But then you're going back to 2006.
I would imagine after Peyton's first year in Denver, there's probably a whole lot of Denver picks, would be my guess.
Yeah. So, there are times when there's like a clear, but in most years you see a wide range. And this would have been, you're right, this would have been one of those years where you would think there would have been a little bit wider range. Like, just the Chiefs more prominently. But, you lose Tyreek Hill. There's just been a lot of moving parts around the AFC to where it's like there's a lot of really good teams.
Yeah.
And a lot of them look good. But the Bills only got better on paper and already looked so overwhelming at times last year.
But so did the Bengals.
Yeah. Well, that's true. But the Bengals, yeah. Like, if you even go back to last regular season, for example, late in the season, I remember watching most of the game where the Chargers went into their place and just took them apart, you know. And I know it's the NFL on any given Sunday and all that stuff.
I mean, look, the Bills got beat by the Jags last year.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
9-6.
Now, you can always find – you can always find a week or two with any team that's total outlier, either – looking way better than you are, or way worse than you are. It is. I gotta say, you're right. It's a little bit. I would not have guessed this. I would not have expected everyone to go like all in on the Bills like this. But that's how I feel about them. So I guess I can't knock it too much.
Well, it's making me look. I think the Bills are going to be really good, but it's making me actively root against them. I will say it. It's making me actively root against them. The Matt Ryan stuff, I've talked about that for months now. Like, I'll believe it when I see it with Matt Ryan and the Colts. I think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be a good team. But people are getting a little out of control with the Matt Ryan love fest. It's not anywhere near as pronounced as the Bills love fest that's going on. And I think the Bills love fest is more justified than the Matt Ryan love fest, to be honest with you. But both of those things are driving me nuts heading into this season.
Well, Kyle Brandt, give him props. I think he probably summarized it as succinctly as you could. Like, he's not Joe freaking Montana. I'm with you. It's, again, in both of these cases, I don't want to give spoilers, but like, I got to raise my hand and say, yeah, I kind of buy it. But I agree. Like, just Matt Ryan on his own, there are some people running wild with, and I feel like it's just basically the Falcons have stunk so much of late that people just stopped watching him.
Yeah.
And just like, oh yeah, Matt Ryan. Yeah. Put him on this, good team and watch him just go off. And yeah, I don't think it's quite that.
We'll get to our predictions later in the show. We'll have a lot more to say about the Colts and the Bills and every other team in the AFC coming up a little bit later here in the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by John Glennon from SI.com. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans heading into their season opening game against the Giants. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.